The Six Nations on Off the Ball with Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
All right, I'm delighted to say Jamie Heaslip is joined us in studio. How are you?
I'm good. Enjoying life.
Enjoying life. It's coming up on a month now since you announced your retirement. Had you a bucket list of things you wanted to tick off very quickly?
No, I suppose when you're playing, you think, oh, when I finish, I'll do this, this, and this. But then I don't know if it's because I had to retire due to injury or not. But there's a lot of admin to finishing playing professionally. There's a whole, obviously, business side to it and all that other stuff. So working my way through that first. And then, I'll try and get away with my missus. I'll try and do a little trip myself. And then we'll just kind of see where the cards fall after that.
Can you take us through the last year from warming up against England to arriving that moment of retirement and moments where maybe you thought you were going to get back, moments where you thought it was all coming to an end, and then ultimately the decision? Like, when did you first realise that this was far more serious than maybe anyone thought?
Well, firstly, it's been a roller coaster, if I have to be honest. But I'd say it was within about the thing that first was worrying me was the reaction of a lot of people on how quick they decided that I needed an operation. you know, it's always worrying when you just see doctors huddling in a corner.
And is this in the days after? Because what we had heard initially was you rolled your ankle.
Well, look, let's not get started on that, because Chinese whispers and what other people said in the media was grossly inaccurate and also a little bit annoying, to be honest, in terms of what certain people were saying, and thought it was some sort of conspiracy. But anyway, the serious matter was, it became pretty serious for me there was a reason why I pulled out of the game. You know what I mean? There was something seriously wrong. I've played games hurt. I think that's the nature of the sport. I mean, it's a contact sport. There's always a niggle somewhere, and you're always sore somewhere, and sometimes you know that's just kind of the nature of it. So the reason for me pulling out was because it was a pretty serious issue for me, where I didn't think I could. Something very unusual for me was happening, and I couldn't really, I couldn't perform. I knew I couldn't perform 100%, and there was it was funny when it happened. And I knew something was wrong. There was this brief moment. It was like a devil on one shoulder, angel on the other. And it's like, don't say anything. Say something. Don't say anything. You'll be grand. Get in. Just warm up. Get out. You know, first 5 minutes. Get another cap. You know,
100%. You're playing England at home.
Yeah, I was like, come on. It's England. You'll be grand. You know, once the adrenaline kicks in. And it was like this. It seemed like went on for an hour in my head. But it was like all of 5-10 seconds, and then I was like, oh, you're in trouble here.
So was it a totally new injury, nothing to do with Pascal Pape?
No.
Being like, in the back, like, a lot of people run on the Friday, you're fine?
The whole week trained absolutely fine, full minutes, everything. People have said the Pape thing. I was like, the Pape thing is like, it's like breaking a finger, you know. The type of kind of break fracture I had off the back of that, you know, it's like it heals really quick, you know what I mean? It's nothing serious whatsoever. So people keep saying that to me, going, it was that knee, wasn't it? And I was like, no, nothing to do with that.
Right.
So it was about a week afterwards I realized it was pretty serious. I had to go in and have an operation, and then 2 weeks later I realized how more serious it was, and I had a long road with that. I had complications off the back of that surgery, which we tried to avoid doing something more serious about it. I think I was meant to return to play around August, September. I knew by June, July that was going to be a problem. And we had to go back and we had to resolve that issue and then start the whole process over again, pretty much, and see how it goes. But, you know, come October, I knew it was going to be tough, to come back. But there was different points in the, you know, it was like, yeah, I'm coming back, I'm not coming back. Yeah, I'm coming back, I'm not coming back. And then...
Is there always the possibility all the way through, and you say, a week afterwards, you're thinking about this operation and you're seeing the doctors huddling in the corner and having conversations and you're starting to get... Like, at that stage, are people talking to you saying...
No, like, I mean...
This may be the end.
No, not really. Like, I won't get into the injury that I had, but the type of injury that it is there's stuff that, you know, it's a pretty serious injury and might not rectify itself, or it might. Some guys have come back, you know, from sometimes they've come back, some guys haven't, depending on severity of the injuries. And there's a whole lot of different things that can go on. And then add in complications on top of that. It just puts a different spin on it altogether. But it was a bit of a roller coaster. At times you think you're coming back, at times not, at times the odds are stacked against you. But I wanted to be able to say that I threw everything at it to try and get back to playing professional rugby. And, you know, Ireland were very good to give me the time. Leinster were unbelievable with their medical team, were unbelievable. The physios, the time they put in between Gareth and Fergal and Leinster, who like, God love Ferg. Ferg had to put up with me for a long, long time. Just one-on-one sessions, you know, just with rehab and prehab and all that sort of stuff. And then working around what... Working around me in terms of trying to get me to that place that I need, I wanted to get to.
What's your mood like when that's going on?
You know, at times, no. Actually, I was pretty cool. Like, I wasn't fired up. And it took me a bit of adjustment not to be. I the one thing I didn't want to do, I didn't want to be sitting in loads of team meetings and loads of team reviews when I knew that I wasn't going to be playing for a long time if I was going to play. And I just didn't want, like, I just wanted to get in, do my rehab, do that. Get out. So I made a deal with Leo and Stuart. I sat in basically on the team review on Mondays.
Okay.
And that was it. You know, I needed a bit of headspace. Yeah, I did need headspace.
I think everyone clearly approaches that differently, because we'd Luke Fitzgerald in here before, and I think he maybe at times during his injury problems found himself a little bit isolated, that there was too much time away from the camp.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it's your soul. Like, for a lot of guys, that's your social circle, that group, and you can feel isolated. You know, you're on a different timetable from all the lads. You're not peaking, or everything's not geared towards the weekend and the game at the weekend. But I kind of found, you know, enjoyment in the fact that I could plan my weekends and I could get away, or, you know, I go out to Skerries a lot with my wife, I'll go out there, or, you know, I was able to plan my summer holidays for the first time in 14 years, which was nice. And stuff like that, you know, so what I mean?
In a weird way, was it almost, even though it's been a difficult year and a tough year, did it end up being maybe a softer landing than it could have been?
Yeah, I've tried to say that to people, that it, like, you kind of linger in the unknown a little bit, which can be tough, because you don't know if you're coming back, you don't know if you are, and you're trying to work your way through that journey. But it, you know, I went to so when I dropped my post Monday morning, whatever it was, I literally hopped on a flight and went to London. I literally, like, posted that, hopped in the car, went straight to the airport, went to London for like pretty much till Tuesday night, just to get away. But I was over there and I was with Kevin McLaughlin, and I was talking to him, and he was saying, you know, it must be different, because for him it was like, you're like, I mean, you know, the cold news comes to you like in a surgeon's office for most rugby players in this kind of position. And for him it was like, you know, I can't remember the time frame, but in essence it was something along the lines of, injured on a Saturday, in the surgeon on a Monday, and he's like, you're done. For me, it was like, you know, it was a lot. I had a
8-9 month process.
Yeah, yeah. So I had time to get used to maybe not, it wasn't all of a sudden. It wasn't going cold turkey straight away. Now, it's still tough because, you know, you have a lot of structure. You have, you know, Leinster, give the lads, like, take for Six Nations, the lads would have got a macro schedule for 8 weeks. So they kind of know what's happening for the next 8 weeks for them. In Leinster, they work to, you know, 4 weeks, 3-4 weeks. And so everything.
You don't really have to think for yourself a lot of the time.
A lot of it's mapped out and thinking is removed for you. But so you kind of get used to that. You get to manage your time. You know, that, like I said, that change room, that is your social environment. That's gone away. Now, some guys, Leinster, were like, look, feel free to stay in here and kind of weaned yourself off it almost, like, you know, train away here, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, I when I made the call, I was like, I'm gone.
Yeah.
I can't. I cleared out my locker. And
that'd be difficult coming in on Tuesday. I'll spend a couple of hours in the gym while the lads are over there with a goal at the end of it. Where,
yeah,
with the, just on that, and I don't know how much goal setting you used to do, but like for a lot of players, and say for somebody like Sean O'Brien, who's had a lot of injury problems the last few weeks when he's been really working his ass off in the gym, I'm sure it's all with the goal of, I'll play last Friday night and maybe, just maybe, Joel give me a chance on the bench against England.
I was actually chatting to him literally while I was filling up my car coming in here. And yeah, for him, it's tough. You know, he's had, God, like, what, 4 years now of injuries for Shawnee? Like, he's, and even before he broke, I remember him, he broke in what, like 2010 was his kind of breakout season, if I remember.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit earlier, but he'd like had a couple of injuries before that, and then he had this period where like he's shown what the type of player he is, because he had a run of games, and right now I just feel for the guy, you know. But he's really, like, Shawnee's happy-go-lucky as well, you know what I mean?
But did you have, over the last year, had you moments where you said, all right, my goal is I'm going to play for Leinster by September?
No.
I, for the November internationals.
I stopped being so goal-focused probably back after 2011 World Cup.
Okay.
Because it just hurt so much losing in that quarterfinal. I was like, I can't deal with this. I had to, like, deal with rugby in a different way.
Was that the first time in your career that you ever had a goal that you didn't meet?
No, I suppose I had goals that, like, I mean, geez, we can go back to, like, my very first goal I set as a professional was, like, start the first Leinster game. And I remember we were playing Edinburgh away, and he started Eric Miller. And I remember he picked the team on a Tuesday or something, check it in. I went into him Tuesday afternoon to chat to him about it. And, like, you know, at that time when you're young, you're like, your hair gets up the back of your neck, and you're like, you know what? Well, fuck him, I'll show him, you know what I mean? And so, like, I mean, I've had setbacks throughout my career, but I don't know, it wasn't that. It was more just, I don't know if the way or the manner or you know, whatever. 2011 just hurt so bad after that quarterfinal that, you know, I remember sitting in the changing room. I thought that was it. I'd never get another, I thought I'd never get another pop at a World Cup. Because you just never know with rugby.
So what did you do then? How did your motivational techniques change?
You know, a lot of it had to do with the way Joe had come in 2010, and he was kind of he was coming away from being quite goal focused, and he talks a lot about the outcome kind of looks after itself and being quite process focused, but then, you know, the process is very much based on, kind of like a set of values of how you want to be and how you want to be as a team or an individual. And I found that worked way better for me, because then it was a lot truer to, like, be it good or bad, I've always tried to be myself and not pander to whatever audience is in front of me. But, you know, that's worked well, and a lot of times it hasn't worked too well for me. But I've always been very happy that I've kind of stayed true to me. So that's how I took what Joe said back in 2010, 2011, and kind of I flipped it onto how you acted and behaved were all based off that. That's how you made your decision, as opposed to it's all geared towards winning something. It's more like I want to be this person, and if I get the outcome, I get the outcome, great. But
Did you initiate that? Like, did you come away from the World Cup in 2011 and think, I can't sit here and say my goal for the next 4 years is to win the 2015 World Cup? I can't sit here with this dream when I know that actually things don't happen that easy.
I think in that summer I openly said we're going to the competition to try and win. Which I think, I mean, no, ambition is not a bad thing. You know, set, you know, aim high and see where you fall. You know what I mean? You tried. But I don't know. It hurts so much. And what Joe was talking about that season with Leinster made so much more sense to me. And I've kind of stuck to that ever since, to be honest. And that just kind of fed my flywheel of trying to be, you know, a better person, I suppose, or better player, and just get spinning, go fast as I can.
just on that moment then of realization that actually it has come to an end, where does that happen? Is that in the doctor's surgery? Is there one moment? Because I guess with a back injury, there's no real ifs or buts. There's no, listen, you can go out and you can try and you can have two or three games back. It sounds like it's the type of injury that ultimately they just go, listen, for your health, you can't take any risks with this.
Kind of. You know what I mean? It's, you know, there's, you have a guy saying like, you're not playing, you know. You know, you boil it down to that, really, to be honest. You know, when you go against someone's decision like that, you know, you'll suffer the consequences. And
do you know going into that meeting that this is the
I knew it was on the cards. Outcome? Yeah, like you know, from back even in October when we had to restart again, we knew it was kind of against us. And then it just kind of hit, I suppose, sticking points and just couldn't get past them, really. And like, I tried my best, you know, to do it. And I wanted to be able to say that, you know what I mean? And I did and threw everything at it. And look, it didn't work out. And
were you devastated?
On one hand, yes, because it's a big part of you. You know, it's big. A lot of people, you know, it's what you do. I mean, I've been playing rugby since I was, like, with a team since I was 8.
My brother, it's what people, I guess, outside of your very close-knit family and friends, it's what people define you by.
Yes, people put that label. People love putting labels on people. So yeah, people would say, Jamie, he's a rugby player. Yeah, and that's, look, I get that. That's fine. I mean, that's absolutely what I've done for, like you said, since, I don't know, since people would have known me, let's say, in the public forum. You're right. Ironically, some of my best mates are the guys who I started playing rugby with at 8, and that's the one thing I do love about rugby. You make such good mates in it. But you play it for, like, that's 26 years I've been playing it. I'm 34 now. So on one hand, it's a big part of your life. I wouldn't say I'm anchored to rugby. Other people are, I think. And that's fine. It's just I never was, I suppose, in a weird way. I was all about being a good pro and.
Well, that's the one thing that has come up that all your former teammates have said, the ultimate team player. We had Brian O'Driscoll in here a couple of weeks ago and said, ultimate team player. You would stake your life on him when he's on the pitch.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, it was mad. So, like, I didn't really realise, what's the word I'm looking for? Not the fallout, but the feedback, let's say, or the messages you'd get when you announce it, you know. It's not something I've done before. And, you know, other people kind of ended, like, you look at iconic figures like Brian, you know what I mean? Now, Brian got his last year was like, you couldn't write
it. I went on.
Yeah, you couldn't write. And then we did slag him off about it, but, like, you couldn't write it. You know, you win in France where it all started for him.
Yeah.
And we hadn't won there since that time that where he got the hat-trick. You know, now he went off early in the last game with Leinster, but, you know, it was a final. We won the final, despite my crazy haircut, if you have those pictures. You know, and you couldn't write it better. But and then he had, like, his dinners, and that was perfect. But then you see, so you kind of go, Brian's kind of on his own, right? But then, you like, the way it ended for Paulie, always kind of, I was a bit gutted for Paulie, you know. No one really remembers him getting injured because it was literally before half time. I didn't even know he was injured until, like, about 5 minutes into the half time meeting. Because we were all just coming off and he was there, and I was like, whatever. You know,
so you probably assume as well he's bulletproof. You see him go down, you assume he'll come up.
Yeah, you're like, he'd be grand. Yeah, they're walking him in. And then it was like, you know, he was in Toulon, but we wasn't playing. And, you know, so I didn't really know what to expect. And the one thing that just blew me away was I always wanted to come into, I always, the guys you work with, just like in any office, the blokes you're around with, hanging out with, you're not going to please them all, right? And you're not going to get on with everyone, but the you know, you want most people to say you were a good bloke. And especially, I always say, especially the younger guys, because when I started out, there were some older players who wouldn't really give time to the younger fellas, wouldn't give you time if you're in the academy. And that was
that they'd see you as a rival, or they just couldn't be arsed?
Maybe both. It was a different time. It was a different culture in the club. And, you know, I always made a big effort with some of the young fellas coming through. to, you know, to get on with them and make them pull them out of their shell a little bit, you know what I mean, and just break down any sort of boundaries or whatever limitations they thought were in place. And it was nice, you know, like people like Joey Carberry or you know, Ferret, Luke McGrath, or whoever, you know, kind of giving you a little shout out. So it was, that was really nice, because at least, you know, the people who know you said you were a good skin, or most of them did anyway.
A letter from the president.
Yeah, that was cool, man. That was, but I got that yesterday. Cool.
Like that, like not everybody gets that. Nobody gets that when they retire.
That was slick. Now I wrote a thank you card to him, asking him, can I come for coffee? Because I have this thing, and I hope he hears this. I have this thing where I like collecting espresso cups from around the world, where of places I go.
Okay.
And so I want to go to Ars. I've been to Ars Rookrum, but I want to go. I've never had an espresso cup before there, because I'm sure, pretty sure they're branded. So I'm trying to see if
Pretty sure you're not allowed to take them home as well, though.
Well, you never. I'm just asking the El Presidente.
Can I come for tea? Can I also take the cup home?
Yeah.
You're not looking for much, are you?
I'm not looking for much. No, but it was here. Look, it was really cool, and as something I actually said, that's something I'm going to frame.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Usually, you only get a letter from the president if you turn 100.
Yeah. Hey, hopefully I'll get another one
when you can fully accept it and appreciate it.
That was nice, and I got a text message off Leo Varadkar as well, which was pretty cool. Because I suppose I've crossed paths with Leo, or the Taoiseach.
I'll call him Leo. Listen, if you're texting each other, you can call him Leo.
No, just because he was Minister of Sport a long time ago, and we kind of crossed paths through different times, and then obviously he's Taoiseach now, so he's the big boss now.
Yeah. You mentioned there that you weren't anchored to the sport, and that, I think, probably created some difficulties for you at times, whereas, like, I was looking earlier to see could I find a quote where you said you didn't watch rugby, but I have in my head that something along those lines was sort of out there around you, that it was sort of taken that...
It was taken, yeah, yeah.
Is that something you would have said?
Yeah. No, I did say it. Oh, yeah. I said it. I probably said it flippantly.
Why?
Because I didn't watch it.
Nothing?
But no. See, they were like, I don't know. I can't remember what the question was, but it was about watching some game. I was like, oh, I don't watch rugby.
Mm.
And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, I don't watch it. And that was kind of it. But what I really meant was, I don't watch it when I, and now I do, because I haven't been playing games. But when I played, I didn't watch it casually at the weekend or record games. So, but I did a load of video work on our laptops. You know, we use Sports Code, our training's recorded. We get all the clippings of the opposition for, you know, preview, review stuff of games as well. And I had that all on my laptop, and I'd go home. I learned early on, I just couldn't stand sitting in the computer room afterwards, after training or anything like that. So I bought the software, did it at home. And I put in the work just away from it at home on the laptop.
Was that with Leinster or with Ireland?
With both.
Okay.
Both. It was really handy. So you'd after training, you go to video guys here. When you get a chance, will you stick the training session on that? And you go home, you watch training, and you preview stuff for the next day. And after games as well, they usually have the rough cut of the games. So I just get that off them. And I usually watch it. Most games, unless we won something, I would have watched the game before, like if it was Ireland now, I would have watched it on the flight home from somewhere or that night, usually, because I can't sleep anyway. It's usually just myself and Joe Schmidt walking the corridors, because neither of us sleep great after games, win or lose.
So what you were saying was, if you wake up at 8:30 on a Saturday morning, you're not turning on Sky Sports and watching Super 4.
Yeah, yeah, but I said it in a very young Jamie Heaslip flippant way.
Yeah. You're quite an individual as well, I get the sense, which is...
you've been very nice to me here, yeah?
No, but what I mean is, like, right now, we're so, with sport, like, teamwork and team ethic and being part of that team and everyone sticking together.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, there's not much space for being an individual, and...
I would argue against that.
Okay.
I think you can. But, like...
Did it cause you issues?
But no, not with the team, no. No. But it... Don't get me wrong, it's... You can be yourself, like... Mm. But you are part of a team, so there is certain things that you got to give up, you got to sacrifice. You know, but you can still be an individual and do your job. You know, you just got to be able to do your job, I suppose. And you got to, you want to buy into certain things as well. You know, you got to want to buy into the team culture, team values, which I did. And to be honest, you know, there's certain points in my career where, you know, like take the captaincy. I was telling someone about this. They're like, were they big moments? And they were big moments. And you know, I always say, you know, Joe Schmidt took the captaincy off me twice, essentially, which are two big blows to take, you know. And but the overriding goal was always playing for the team and winning for the team. And yeah, it hurt at the time, but the goal was always to, you know, do the jersey better. And the jersey and the team mattered more to me than my own individual success or nominating for this, or
it is still a blow, though,
or this guy liking me or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? I cared more about the team's success rather than anything else. You know what I mean? But you could still be yourself in that. Like, I was, you know, social media, I leaned into that pretty hard. I liked that. I had outside interests. That was both for me personally to have balance and also to have a bit of a mix.
Yeah. Don't be tapping. They get very upset if you're tapping. The white boots, was that part of your
that's been a lingering thing from the Eddie era. I've been told that you won't play internationals wearing white boots, and hence why I always tried to wear white boots after that.
Were those words actually
used? 100%.
And how did you respond?
If you actually look at the boots I think I wore that day, or the Adidas ones, and they were like black, but they had like a white trim going down the middle. So I kind of settled them out. But then I just said, no, I'm never settling. I'm never letting that being the thing that tips you to play or not play. Because I thought it was just so nothing. You know what I mean?
Did you have it out with him?
Did I have it out with him regarding white boots?
Yeah.
No, I mean, it was the first time I was in the camp. Like, I mean, Eddie didn't remember my name first time. He called me Graham three times in a row after I corrected him.
Right. So that was a difficult relationship then. Did you ever get over it?
No, I always say, look, he was the head coach, you know. He had to make his decisions. And head coaches make tough decisions all the time. And, he brought Ireland to a really successful place. Did I agree with him? No, but like, not every player is going to agree with the coach and the decisions they make, obviously, especially if you're not getting picked.
Yeah.
But you just kind of, at that point, like, they're critical points. You got to ask yourself, are you going to make it? You're not going to make it? Do you want to be a guy that kind of doesn't make it and just plays club rugby or not? Or, you know, what's the overriding goal? And you know, I had to kind of back myself that I would eventually make it. I had to make a decision then. But that period of 06 to 08 was very like, I don't know if I'm going to make it. There was a lot of doubt in there. And that's why it always kind of fed into making sure you had some sort, I'm not saying it's the master plan, but some sort of plan outside of rugby, because that was a bit of a point where I didn't know if...
You still in college at that stage?
Which way I was going to go. Well, I'd finished college before I started rugby, but I was doing a master's. I started a master's in... off the back of all that, I think I started a master's in 07, actually, yeah.
All right, because I would have always sort of assumed that you're nominated for Junior World Player of the Year in, was it 04? Make your debut for Ireland in 06, last game at Lansdowne Road, Pacific Islands. Granted, you don't make the squad for the World Cup in 07, but that you're very much up-and-coming, young player, firmly established, you're going places.
You know what, the wise man would say that, but when you're young and you're in the middle of it, you're like, you're in your lane and you're kind of focused on the end goal, you have the blinkers on you. But, you know, at the time I was looking at the players that were ahead of me or were in that World Cup squad ahead of me. And, you know, it was tough for me to agree with the decisions that were being made. But look, there were decisions that were made and you played a hand. Like Michael Checa at that time was amazing. He was amazing. And so like players, like it's funny the players you remember, like when I didn't make that squad, I remember hopping the car straight away and driving down to Nace and like Checa ringing me, you know, and Mal O'Kelly ringing me actually, you know, and you remember that and you kind of remember those guys. Dars actually got in touch with me, you know, you kind of remember those elder guys at the time reaching out for you and kind of, I know, giving you a little pep talk, I suppose. Yeah. But, you know, it's all part of learning how to deal with those. Because it's like winning and losing a game. You got to learn how to deal with the success and the failure.
It's almost more difficult, though, I think, with a coach that maybe you don't see eye to eye with, because there's always another game. You're heading into an 07 World Cup. Nobody, there's high expectations at the time. Clearly, it ends up being a disaster. But like Eddie O'Sullivan could have been in charge for the next 3-4 years.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't know. You don't know. And that's why I had to think of the bigger picture. Will I make it? Won't I make it? No, I'm gonna double down on myself here and go for it and say that like I gave my all. I mean, I remember when Brad Thorne came back, it was in our club, and he came in January 2011, I believe. No, he was in there just after the World Cup, wasn't it? Yeah. And, you know, he was like, you know, you can have a grand old career or you can have a great career. You know what I mean? Which one do you want? Which one do you want to have?
So when did you go from having a grand old career to having a great career?
Well, no, I decided to kind of, I probably decided I was going to try and give it my all, even more so than what I thought I was giving it. Around that time, that kind of 06, 08 period of like, is this going to work? Is it not going to work for me? And look, you know, things kind of picked up after that and went well. And you know, I was lucky to be part of some amazing teams and some, like in the back row, some amazing, like David Wallace, like taught me a lot. And was so good to me. I had Keith Gleeson before that in Leinster, who Keith Gleeson was a serious pro. You know, I was really lucky to have some class players around me. You know, even when I was in the Ireland squad and not playing.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Simon Easterby was there. You had Axel who was there. You know, you had Wally who was there. Gleeson, these guys, learning off those guys was, you know, that was, I suppose it was your apprenticeship as well. And you know, you can either have a no, I'll prove them wrong attitude or oh, I'm going to learn attitude. And I try to learn. Like, I mean, I try to take the feedback as positively as I could.
Like, looking back now, did Eddie have some sort of a point? Like, the white boots, was there a flashiness there when you were that age? Like, you're saying you look back and you started working your ass off. And I'm thinking then you're talking about going into Cheka when you don't get that start for Leinster. You go in on the Tuesday and you have the word that there's something maybe in you 2 years later that wasn't there?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think white boots or colour of boots define a player. I could be wrong.
No.
You know, and Eddie gave me his feedback. I asked for his feedback after the World Cup when he didn't. Sorry, asked for his feedback when he didn't pick me. He said I wasn't big enough, strong enough, or fast enough. I think were his three things. So, and
where
did you
go from there?
Well, look, you know, you try and knuckle down and work on that. And look, he's like, sorry, I mean, I don't mean to be bagging him, but like, coaches make tough decisions. I'm sure there's a lot of players that like don't agree with Joe's selection or Leo's selection or Cheka's selection or whoever. You know, that's sport. You know, there's only 15 guys who can take the field. You know,
you're probably lucky then the way that you end up working with two coaches in Cheka and Schmidt, who maybe in very different ways can get the very best out of you. The Cheka, personality-wise, seem to understand something within you and bring you to a next level. And then Joe, the sort of discipline he expects, which again, even though people pick up on lines like, oh, I don't watch rugby matches, it seems you have this incredible discipline to go and work your ass off. And
I'm not afraid of hard work. I always want to be the hardest worker in the room. And that's tough in Leinster because there's a lot of good hard workers. And same in Ireland. But yeah, Cheka was great. Like, Cheka did so much to change that club. Like I don't think he gets half the credit that he should. He really changed the direction, the culture of that club. And then Joe came in and built on top of that. And Joe built, you know, a pretty serious thing on top of that. And he's done so with Ireland as well. Because Decky did a lot with changing the Irish identity. Or the Irish the team culture, you know what I mean? It's probably a better way of putting it. But look, it was... Yeah, I mean, I love working with Cheka. I actually met him recently. I went down to the Dubai Sevens and I met him there. So, because he was there, I was stopping off on the way home from the November series.
Okay, yeah.
He was in great spirits. And Joe is hilarious. Like, Joe has been my coach since 2010, you know, and I have a very good relationship with Joe. And he kind of let me be me as long as, you know, I knew my stuff, and Joe was like that. I mean, if you know your stuff and you're in shape and you know your job and you execute it, you know, in training and when you need to, you mean he kind of leaves you be, I suppose. If you put the work in and you're disciplined and you live to the values of that environment that you've all agreed, you know, he's pretty fair with that. And you know, he's got, again, like every coach, he's got to make some tough calls, and sometimes people agree, sometimes don't. You know, Stuart Lancaster is another one who's been a, it's funny, I bumped into him yesterday, and whereas you know, two of us, we've been talking afterwards, and it's just like, I kind of said, and he said, you know, it's a shame that we didn't get to work more with each other, because I really enjoyed working with him for a time, and I think he's you know, he's up there with Joe in my books in terms of coaching and culture and style and everything, you know.
The Six Nations on Off the Ball with Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
It ended up being a great career. You won everything except for the World Cup, essentially. 3 Heineken Cup titles, 3 Pro 12 titles, a Challenge Cup, 3 Six Nations, 2 Triple Crowns, the Grand Slam. There were individual nominations, even right up to being nominated for World Player of the Year in 2016. And so you're in the next World Cup cycle. You're thinking about 2019. But just looking back over all that, was there one moment, is there one night that stands out? Like, is it Cardiff?
Well, funny enough, Cardiff is a place where so much of my rugby memories come from. I won a Grand Slam there, won a Heineken Cup there. Like, that was in Leinster. That's probably one of my favourite moments ever, for loads of different reasons, and mainly because some of my family members were getting a lot of nasty enough abuse coming into halftime from fans.
Really?
Yeah. But by the end of that game, they were pretty quiet, I think. which was kind of nice, nice moment to hear. And also the way this change room, the huddle on the pitch afterwards. But with Ireland, it, for me personally, it was Chicago. You know,
even more so than the Grand Slam.
Look, the Grand Slam was amazing. Like, amazing. And I hope the guys do it. I'm hoping the guys do it this weekend, because it's amazing. But I think that was the 9th or 10th time I'd played. I have to look back on this. But it was 9th or 10th time I played New Zealand, and I just, like, at that stage in my career, you know what I mean. Barring the World Cup, it's like, I haven't beat these guys. But we've beaten everyone else. I was like, I haven't beaten these guys.
And the way, and the manner of how it happened on the night as well, with the various injuries.
They're the top of the totem pole, and you know, I remember I have a picture, and it's myself and Church, and we're sitting on top of the hotel, and we're just, you know, it's a good moment, especially because of the journey with the lads that were there, and Mick Kearney as well. Had a little moment with him, I suppose, on the field afterwards, because he'd kind of gone through it as well. So. But look, there are so many, man. It's all, like, to me, like, the journey's just been, that part of my life, that journey has been amazing, you know. And pretty cool.
As well, with one of the low points, I'm sure, was the red card against New Zealand.
Yeah, it wasn't one of my highlights anyway, yeah.
did that play into that? That, like, I get sense, maybe with your dad being in the army, that, like, discipline is such an important thing for you. For a moment like that, down in New Zealand, to get the red card, is that a moment you look back on now, and like, is what's the emotion that you think about when you
I was like, oh shit, what did I just do? Again, a very reactionary type of thing. But I remember that week, we're all like, excuse me, we went down there and we're like, you know, Rich McCaw, if you're 10 metres from the line, he'll kill the ball. If you have the momentum, he'll kill the ball. And I played Nuffin a couple of times to know that. And look, he was an unbelievable seven, and blessed in the dark arts of sevens. And
he'll kill the ball and he'll get away with it.
You know, sometimes he turned over balls. You know, he just had ways of controlling the game, right? And I remember, you know, in the review, that's like, you know, just, you know, if you see him around the ruck, if we have the momentum, you know, just get him out of there. And I think it's in the first 15. Yeah, it is. I think it was 14, 15 minutes I got red carded. But we get a lot of momentum. And like, it starts off, I think, from just outside their 10-meter line. We make all this momentum. And we kind of coming around the corner. We're beating around the corner. And we're just the other side of the post. And I see him coming over the top of the ruck. And he's on it. And I was like, I hit him. Couldn't get him off it. And I just lashed out. And like, Keane Healy's leg actually saved me, because he got in the way then as well. But yeah, it was a silly mistake. It was a stupid. It was a very childish thing to do.
Who's the most difficult conversation with then? Is it like, is it your teammates? Is it with everyone, your family?
Everyone came in. I said nothing. I had to sit in the sideline, obviously, because you're not allowed. So I sat in the sideline for the whole game, gutted, because, you know, playing New Zealand with 15 players is tough enough. 14 is tough. I think at one stage the game went down to 13 people each side because of yellow cards and stuff. Anyway, look, I was the first one to stand up when, you know, like anything, you gotta own your mistakes. And came in the change room afterwards, put my hand up straight away, owned it, and you know, that was that, and you moved on.
You mentioned a lot of the tributes that have been coming through over the last couple of weeks, and really good to be able to hear these nice things said about you.
It's very rare to hear you guys say nice things about
what?
Me. No, I'm only messing.
No. Listen, we rated every performance as it happened.
Go on, anyway. Go on.
How do you want people to remember your career?
For me personally, I don't. This is going to sound weird. I want the jersey to be remembered more, and the jersey is going to last a lot longer than any player, any individual. And no player owns the jersey. You get a chance to wear it for a day, and then you see what happens. So all I ever wanted to do, look, once you get playing rugby as a career, like, that's the boyhood dream come true. And then once you get to play for Leinster, you get to play for Ireland. I distinctly remember being like playing like under 10s for Naas. I don't know how my brothers did it. They robbed the ball from that Australia semi-final game back in 91. Was it 91? The one that was in Lansdowne.
Yeah.
Yeah, somehow they got one of the balls from there, right? And I had it when I was young. And me thinking I was Simon Gagan running around my house. So like when you get to play, you fulfill boyhood dreams.
Is that what you're thinking then when you're finishing that try against Italy? You're like, yeah. I've done this before.
This is all part of the plan.
This is how it always played out.
I just need longer, blonder hair like Simon Gagan and a massive jersey. But look, after a while, when you know, I was very lucky to be part of teams that were successful, and then you kind of think of the bigger picture. You want that jersey to try and create a legacy, I suppose, for the jersey, not yourself, but for the jersey. And I've always tried to leave that jersey in a better place. And that's what kind of drove me for a lot of those years with trying to be a good pro and try to set a standard and set a good example. And I wasn't one for big inspirational talks or anything like that. I was more of a kind of an action guy, you know what I mean?
I think you probably achieved that, because everything that's going to be asked over the next couple of years about the number 8 jersey is, who's going to fill Jamie Heaslip's boots?
Number 8 wise, like back row wise, we are so lucky in this country. Like right now, you've got, you know, CJ's doing unbelievably well there for Ireland. I mean, in Leinster, you've got Jack and Max, two unbelievable players. You know, back row in general, you got like Dan Levy, you got Sean O'Brien, you got Reese Ruddock. You know, you got Pete. Yeah, you got Jordy, who was delighted to see back in the group. We're very lucky with the back rows that we have. I think they're going to be in great place. And those guys are driven. They're driven, and I think they're going to see the reward of putting the work in. And this Six Nations has shown that. I mean, they've stuck to their plan. They stuck to the way they want to play. They've been really, really clinical and smart. And I think it's kind of like I talk about that flywheel. It's going to feed that flywheel even more. I think anyway.
Yeah.
And they'll want to do more. They want to get better. And that's great, considering that there's a World Cup in 16 months' time.
All our rugby coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us. Jamie Heaslip is with me in studio this evening. I do want to touch on the game tomorrow and Ireland going for a Grand Slam. You're going to Twickenham. It's going to be your first time actually going to an Ireland game, which would be quite a strange experience, I would say.
Here are my tickets. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going.
You don't want to flog them off. You don't want to do the nice thing and maybe give them away as a prize to our listeners.
No, I haven't been to a game.
You've been to Leinster games. Like, what?
I've been to Leinster games.
What's,
yeah.
And
it took me a while to go to Leinster game. I don't think I didn't go until the semi-final against Scarlets. Yeah.
How do you think you'll feel?
Or was that the final even? No, semi-final.
Right, I know you've got to say here tonight, they go win the Grand Slam.
Oh, how do I think they'll do?
No, how do you think you will feel watching on in the stand?
Oh, it's mad. It's mad feeling.
Like, is there a bit of jealousy?
No, it's not jealousy. Because you want the lads to win, right? Because you know the blokes. And you want the blokes, separate from, let's say, the Ireland team, you want your mates. You want them to do well, right? But then it's really weird. I was talking to Stuart about this. Because he's not going to the game in Twickenham, and he says he hasn't been to a game in Twickenham in a long time. I don't think he's been since.
I wouldn't blame him.
Yeah, right. And it was really weird. I was saying it's so you want the lads to do well, but then like your little ego kind of devil over here kind of talks going like, you know, they're doing well without you, you know, and you're kind of like, oh man. But then you're like, no, I mean, you just park that. And you're like,
you're wasting 30 years' time when we're still only, you know, we're the living Grand Slam winners.
You want the lads. And it's like talking to some of the players during the week and, you know, they want to, some of them, like, I mean, it's only Rory and Rob who've had it. And those lads want a Grand Slam. And I want it for them and I want them to be successful. And it was great to see that they're not just satisfied with a championship. That's great to see. That's the standard that we're at now. You know what I mean? That we're not afraid to go after that. You know, I'm sure they'll be playing it down and that's, they've got to do that for their own mindset coming into it. But it's weird. But I've been at the grounds, kind of do one or two kind of corporate things beforehand, but I haven't stayed to watch an Ireland game yet.
Right, so you've actually been in the stadium the day of the game and left.
Twice.
So you've obviously thought about it then, that actually it is going to be maybe a little bit difficult, a little bit weird, maybe somewhat emotional, during the anthem.
It's weird. Yeah, I stayed for the anthems on Saturday, and I left just afterwards. But yeah, it was just weird having that flip, because I always, like, I didn't.
Why didn't you want to? So you stayed even for the anthems for the game against, and you let. Like,
and I just said, no, I'm gone. It was too weird for me. I don't know why. It was just too weird for me. So I just went up to the pub and watched it, and I went home.
Now, those tickets are priceless at this stage.
No, I'm going.
You're not
going
to go to the game tomorrow.
I'm going.
Listen to the anthems and go, actually, I'm out of here.
No, I'm going. And I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I want to see Laz lift the trophy.
Have you been to Carton House?
No, I haven't been out there, no. Carton House just means work in our head. It's a beautiful hotel, and the staff are amazing to us, and the setup is class. But like, for I don't know how long we've been out there, but that just means work.
You're in a difficult position probably for the next couple of years in terms of punditry and analysing, because like, they are your mates, a lot of them, and you've played with so many of them. But when you look at the way Ireland have gone through this, and it has, like, it's strange. It was sort of muted after you left last Saturday. Ireland have all but won the championship, having got another, a third bonus point win in the row, because, as I put it, I think we've all been schmittified, that we've had this expectation level has been raised to such an extent that really it's Grand Slam or nothing. Like, the cycle that this Ireland team are in, do you feel Schmidt has them exactly where he wants them in terms of game plan, in terms of style, 16
months
out?
They're not definitely. It looks like they are playing to a, you know, a certain game plan, all right, and that wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, but they've got to approach with a certain mindset. You can't, you know, nothing's a given in sport. You know that. You've been covering it long enough. So, I mean, England were in Ireland's position this time last year, and look what happened. And they kind of Ireland ruined the day on them. You know, that's probably the only silver lining on the day for me watching England lose. I don't know. It's a weird one. But look. They set their own standard internally, and you know, they want to chase that. And look, they've won another championship. I mean, what's that? Joe came in with Ireland in 2013.
He's three now.
It's three. Yeah, I know it's three for Joe. But I'm just trying to think of the time period. You know what I mean? But like, you know, I know in the past there was talk of the golden era being over for Irish rugby. But I mean, it's great to see this squad. I think this squad is probably one of the best assemble squads Ireland have had in a long time. I've been part of some really good squads, but I think this squad is really, you know, that's the current squad, I suppose. They're in a really good spot, and I hope they do it. I'm a fan now, you know what I mean? And pundit, it was funny, one of the lads, like, you're gonna be a pundit now, and I was like, I don't know, I'll see, I'm not committing to anything right now, and this is the first media thing I've done, since retiring, because I just, to be honest, I wanted to just get away from it, give myself headspace, be a fan, let the lads do their thing, you know, and watch them do their thing and be a fan of it. I don't know what I'll do in that arena, but I'll always be, I've always tried to be honest, so I would always try and continue to be honest.
What if you were there, and if you were, say, taking over the captaincy for tomorrow's game, and you're going into a Grand Slam, like, what do you want as players heading into, like, everybody knows the importance. Do you need the big speeches? Do you need the Paul O'Connell moment before you're going out onto the pitch? Or do you need to be analytical and calm?
Paulie would probably say it himself, that those kind of moments of trying to get people emotionally charged, they're gone a few years now, because if you're not there already, get out of the change room, to be honest. But then you do have people like Paulie who can just, like, set a room on fire with his talks. But I don't know. It's all about the different styles. And our change room and our leadership group were always a blend of different styles. And some people are good at other things, you know. I tend to be quite matter of fact in terms of what I would say. You know, this is what we're focusing on. I know during the week they probably, you know, that's probably how they approached it. It's like, okay, here are our opportunities. This is the game plan. These are the moves that we're going to be using. Let's map all that out. This is their threats. Let's set up a defense for that. I mean,
controllable.
That's what they got to focus on. You can't worry about the rest. You know what I mean?
What did you judge your game? What was the one stat when you came in you looked at that you thought, yeah, had a good game?
I didn't work like that. I wouldn't mark myself out of 10, like, what goes down and you know, and I wouldn't be too concerned about it. I'd always be like, okay, what did we do well? I try and analyze the game in terms of, you know, what we did well and what we can improve on. And sometimes, you know, that was easier to do when you won, and sometimes it was hard to do when you won, because you have to stop yourself papering over any cracks. Because that's what you can do when you're winning. But then also when you lose, you can't go too far either. You know, I always say the pendulum swings, you know, and you just don't try and swing to an extreme either end. You just try and keep it in the middle, you know. And with some of the losses, okay, try and boil it down. Joe and Leo are really, really good at that, of going, you know, you might have lost the game, let's say, for whatever reason, and you could have been beaten by 10, 14 points, or, you know. But actually, what led to that? You know, was it something very simple? Was it some basic, you know, was it something out of nowhere? Or is it a breakdown in the system? And so you just try and stay in the middle, you know what I mean? And again, I didn't, now that I'm a fan, I probably will. I'll be listening to Off the Ball. I didn't read or listen to the media around it. And I said that, which probably didn't go down too well, but what I meant was, because the only person's opinion that matters at the end of the day is the coach, and he's the guy who picks the team, which I learned very early on in my career, despite what you think or what you know what I mean, he's the person who picks the team. So it's all about, okay, how, what they are seeing and what they can improve. So, you know, the feedback loop you get off your coaches, your head coach, your forwards coach, your backs coach, even if you're a back row, because you got to know how to play with them, skills coach, scrum coach, all that stuff, you know, and that constant feedback loop, that's the kind of the circle that you would be looking for your feedback of, those pluses and minuses from the game. And sometimes you got the outcome you wanted, which is a win, and sometimes you didn't, and you know, you always say there's another game until there's no more.
We might leave it at that, I think. Dun, dun, dun. No. Are they going to do it?
I think so. I haven't seen what the bookies and all them are saying. My gut says yeah. I you know, ever since Johnny smashed that drop goal after God knows how many phases,
41,
it showed a real good resilience, because that game wasn't pretty. I mean, Ireland weren't that great in that game. They didn't really create a whole lot of opportunity. France scored a try pretty easily, in my opinion. Ireland didn't really threaten a whole lot, but to show that resilience to go the way they did, you know, to go 40, to take the drop, like, whatever the drop goal, right? Drop goal was like, it was balls of steel by Johnny. He stepped up and, you know, he misses that, he gets slated, but he nails it, right? And he missed one earlier in the game and he nails it. Fair play to him. But like, no one goes on about like the drop goal, Hendy getting that drop goal, the crossfield kick, Earlsy getting that, and the balls to go for that that crossfield kick. The plays by the lads just to keep, like, that would have been energy sapping. And for them to get to work themselves into that, and you could see them working, you could see it working themselves into the middle field and getting down and staying in the middle channel.
Do you watch it? So as part of maybe going tomorrow to the game, but bits you've seen of Ireland so far, as you're watching them, you go, I know what they're doing there.
There's certain things that I know that they're doing. Yeah, I won't say what they are, but just because I played in Joe's system for so long.
You didn't sell the secrets to Stuart Lancaster, did you?
No, I didn't. Yeah, sure, it's all. I'm trying to get him an Ireland jersey and see if he'll wear one. But he's actually, you know, talking to Stuart is really funny because he's been blown away by the culture over here around the game and how, like, with the club, like, in Munster, most of the players are from Munster, and Leinster, most of the players are from Leinster, and same with all the clubs. And he was just like, man, this is mad. And then when Ireland roll into town, it's like another level. And I was like, yeah, just wait till you see it now in Twickenham, Richmond will be taken over. But yeah. I think they're going to do it. And ever since that moment, I was like, this team is in a good place. They're in a really good place. And it's all about momentum in Six Nations. And they never got taught, you know. I was openly saying Grand Slam on social media, but I can't because I'm not playing, you know what I mean? But the lads were like, no, they're next game. I think they can do it, and I hope they do it. I want to be there seeing them lift a trophy. I want to be able to congratulate my mates on doing an unbelievable gig.
Yeah, you might get a night out with them. They might let you in.
Well, I texted Joe after, when was it, Saturday? And I was like, look, if you're looking for a water boy, just let
There's
me know.
There's a medal in that, isn't there?
I was like, is there anything in there?
Yeah. I still have the suit. I can come around Saturday night.
He said I was overqualified to be a water boy, but I don't know. I've asked, the Barbarians is the only team I never got to play for that I really would have loved to play for.
Oh, yeah.
And I said I'd be a water boy for them if there was an opportunity. So I'm trying to upskill myself. So water boy's the goal for me right now.
Here, listen, it's something. You can move back into that goal mindset again now you've retired and set yourself some lofty ones like that. You've been brilliant with your time, Jamie. There's actually loads more stuff that I would love to have got to, but we might do that again over the coming months hopefully we get another chance to chat to you. Enjoy.
You need to get that average age of your panel down, so maybe I can get involved.
Who do you want? Is that a personal dig at Brian O'Driscoll? Is that a dig at Keith Wood? Who's that aimed at?
No one. I'm only taking the mic.
Great stuff, Jamie. As I said, all our rugby coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
The Six Nations on Off the Ball with Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.